Welcome to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast with founders Stan Campbell and Mike Darter. If you're forced to fight the battle for your life, CCW Safe will fight the battle for your future.
Welcome back to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast. I'm Mike Darter.
I'm Stan Campbell. What's up?
Here again with the infamous Stan Campbell. We're in Dallas. We're doing another podcast with Steve Moses. Steve, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, guys.
And today we're going to talk about, and this is another article that Steve wrote. If you don't subscribe to our newsletter and you do listen to this podcast, I would advise you to check out our newsletter, check out our news section on our site. Steve writes articles pretty much every Monday is Steve's day. And he had an article not too long ago on this topic. We're going to talk about tips and tactics for armed parents, which I think is a great topic.
Awesome topic. Yeah, you know, we're all parents, and really the majority of the carriers are as well. And you have to really take a lot of things into consideration as being a parent. You know, a lot of times we get lost in the, kind of the crowd of opinion on what to do when you're involved in a shooting and how to store your weapons and different things like this. But we decided to bring Steve back today to really cover that and, you know, discuss his article, a lot of the talking points there. There's a lot of good stuff. You know, we love to give tips and suggestions for concealed carriers, you know, just to add to your toolbox, you know, your mental toolbox, or, you know, even your emergency plans. So, Steve, would you get us started on that? And thank you very much for being here.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure. I recently had the opportunity to conduct an interview with Melody Lauer. This was at the 2019 Tactical Conference. I sought her out and asked for about 15 minutes of her time, which she graciously shared. And Melody is known for her armed parent classes. Melody has three children. She is an excellent defensive firearms instructor. Also an EMT, very articulate, and she's been teaching classes on this particular subject for many years. My children are all grown up. I do have grandchildren, and they're very, very precious to me. And I really don't care if you're a parent, not a grandparent. The high probability at some point you'll be a grandparent someday. And so to that end, having knowledge perhaps some, you know, techniques and tactics that might be able to help you protect your children in the event that you're the target of a criminal assault, I think would be very, very valuable. So I decided, like I said, to glom on to Melody and get some information from her, which she shared. And she just gave me some excellent material to work with.
That's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I like you, have adult children. Michael has children below the age of 18. And, you know, I've always been impressed by his preparedness for his children. Of course, mine, I always, you know, bringing them up, they've been around a lot of cops. You know, I worked for SWAT and, you know, for the tactical unit there, Oklahoma City Police. And, you know, I made sure, you know, at home, when we were out, I continuously gave tips and stuff to my kids, you know, when they went to, you know, college, you know, how they can be the ones that actually survive, knowing what to do in an active shooter situation. And but what impressed me about what Mike did with his kids is that he really did, you know, slam home the importance of an emergency plan if there was a break-in, you know, something as simple as that, you know, knowing what to do, knowing where to go. I actually stole a lot of that from him, you know, when I was, you know, teaching my kids about the same, you know, because I really loved his emergency plan. Can you explain that for a little bit real quick, Mike?
Yeah. So, I think we talked about it before, but we had a, when I moved into a new house one time, we had an alarm system that went off one night, and we had two staircases, one kind of at the by the master bedroom, the front of the door, and then there was one at the back of the house, and all the kids' rooms were upstairs. And when that alarm went off, you know, I got up, I had my gun, I went out into the ran out to the first stairwell, and two of my daughters were coming down that stairwell, and so I kind of pushed them back to my wife behind me, and then I heard my other girl screaming, running down the far stairwell. So I'm like, take it. I'm running through the house, and I hit a door. You know, I'm kind of hitting the doorknobs as I go, where the lever knobs, and I hit one, and it was like it didn't come open, but I could tell that it was unlocked because they're pellet doors, so they actually lock. When they're locked, they're solid. And I hit that thing, and I thought, you know, then it really kind of became real. I was like, wow, there is somebody could be in the house. Somebody could have tried this. So I got her and got her back into the room. It took officers about 20 minutes to get there because we lived kind of out of ways. And so it was a big lesson for me. It ended up being an outside door that had blown open that didn't have access into the house. But it was a big lesson for me then. So I went over, you know, that next day we talked about it and went over my girls a plan of what to do. And the oldest was to get my youngest, because my youngest is the one that ran off by herself. So my oldest is to get my youngest and then go to my middle daughter, which was at the top of the stairs, and just hold right there. And we kind of walked through it and talked about it more. And then not too soon after that, one morning, it was early, like, you know, 7 o'clock, six, seven o'clock in the morning. My wife had opened one of the doors and forgot to turn the alarm off. So it went off again. And I was walking out. And when it went off, I actually looked up and I saw my girls, and it worked. My oldest got the youngest, went to the middle daughters, and they were just kind of all huddled there together. And my oldest kind of was hugging them and kind of waiting for me, because the deal was they were supposed to go to the top of the stairs and wait until they visually saw me. And so it's cool. Yeah, it was just a cool little drill that turned into a lesson.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just thought about that. And this was long before, you know, CCW, since we started the business. And, you know, it just stuck with me, you know, the importance of planning and having an emergency plan. And you can't always control people, especially in the middle of night, bumps in the night, you wake up, you're kind of disoriented. You know, even Mike, you know, he didn't mention it this time, but he was for the first time when, you know, the alarm went off in the middle of the night, wakes you up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you kind of, you know, got to get yourself together mentally because you're not ready. And, you know, so it just hits home the importance of having those emergency plans and practicing those emergency plans and debriefing when something goes wrong so things can get better. It's no different from debriefing a small tactical unit. Your family becomes your unit, and mm-hmm. you have to make sure everybody knows their responsibilities and what to do. So, you know, I really, really enjoy, you know, sharing that with people so that they know that the importance of doing it, you know, for their own children. But I'm going to allow Steve to jump back in, because this is some important stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what, one thing I might address there is that I believe I wrote an article that appeared in a recent CCW blog on home intruder response. That is a very good time for me to go ahead and just, you know, direct people towards either that article or perhaps getting educated on how you would deal with a home intruder response, especially if you have other family members, and especially if those other family members are children. And so a lot of that is going to have to do with what are the variables that you're working with? How many other persons do you have to be responsible for? What are their ages? What are their capabilities? What is the layout of your house? And, you know, there's three different scenarios that could happen. or well, generally there's three different scenarios. One is that you know that you have an intruder in your house and you're able to stay in one room and go ahead and alert that intruder that you're there, that you're armed and you've called 911. That's number one. The second one is going to be not sure what you heard. It may be the proverbial bump in the night. You're pretty certain that there's no one in your house, but prudence dictates that you go ahead and do a careful search of your house just to ensure that. And then the third, there is someone in your house and you don't have everyone in your room where you can basically ensconce them and protect them. And so you must then move to another area in order to get to those persons you have to protect, especially if they're young children, or intercept anyone that may be trying to get to those particular people. And in that particular instance, you have to take all those things into consideration, look at your skills, look at your abilities, look at the layout of your house and plan accordingly. So that is number one. The gist of this particular article was protecting children. One, the fact is that the one of the key words in tips and tactics for the armed parent is armed, which that suggests that the parent or parents actually have firearms in their house. It is very, very important to secure those firearms and protect them from your children having any access to them whatsoever. And if you believe that simply putting a firearm on a fireplace mantle or on top of a refrigerator or under your socks in your, you know, your bedroom drawer, you're protecting that that firearm from access, then you're probably mistaken. Children are very imaginative, inventive. It's amazing some of the things that they can do that seems to be completely beyond their capabilities. And I have it on good authority. There have been instances where children as young as 2 years old have been able to get their hands on a double action revolver and shoot themselves. And people that are not familiar with a double action revolver, typically that is a revolver that requires you to apply 12 to 14 pounds of pressure on the trigger, which causes the hammer to come back and then go forward and fire. In these instances, a two-year-old can actually put both thumbs on that trigger and press the trigger. And typically when that happens, it's going to be oriented towards their face or their body. So there is no excuse whatsoever for not securing that handgun from the person. I mean, from unauthorized people, especially children. So don't believe for a moment that this child will never be able to get this handgun or whatever, long gun or whatever, simply because you carefully hid it or put it in a place that would require great effort to get to. It absolutely needs to be on your person or locked up in a gun vault. That's very, very important. We need to protect our children from the very tool that we have chosen in which to protect them. That's critical.
Hey, before you move on, Steve, do you have any suggestions on lock boxes, some possibilities?
There's a number of lock boxes. In my opinion, I would like to have something that is actually, I think I even touched on this in an article I wrote on the Shop Show. I don't know if that's been published yet, where there is a lockbox. Sorry, you kind of caught me off guard there. It actually, you can secure this to your nightstand, and it has a code that basically you can put in these codes, these numbers. I think there's even some that respond to fingertip. We'll read your fingertips that will then open where you can secure a handgun. I'm kind of the opinion that I need to be able, if I need a firearm in my house, there's a pretty good chance I need it pretty quickly. And so I want something that I can almost instantly get my hands on and get through that secured vault to get to that farm, or otherwise I keep my farm on my person.
Awesome. Thank you.
And so, you know, we've touched on that. And then the other thing is protecting our children. Home invasions, home intrusions do take place. While we don't want to discount the fact that it may happen, they're relatively rare for most people that live in a crime-free environment. They themselves are not criminals or, you know, using illegal drugs. The reason for that is that they're pretty risky. We now have locked doors, people have dogs, they have security systems. So if you are the target or the victim of a home intrusion or home invasion, don't want to discount it, but the chances of that are not nearly as good as the fact that you are likely to be accosted in a transitional environment. In a transitional environment, it's typically going to be an area outside of your home that represents an area that you're going from your home to another place. So transitional area could be the streets, it could be a parking lot, it could be an ATM, it could be a gas station. All of these are transitional areas. And the problem that we often see is that in these transitional areas, that is where you are the most vulnerable to being accosted by a criminal. And the reason for that is that if we're within our home, or let's say, for instance, I'm in my office or wherever I work, for the most part, I know the people that are around me. That is, if someone that I don't know actually enters that particular area, it's unusual, and it typically gets my attention. So to that end, in these transitional areas, it's not unusual to be in close proximity to persons that you don't know. I mean, that's just something that just happens all the time. And so to that end, basically, again, that's when we're most susceptible, getting kids in and out of the cars. That's a big concern. And if you have small children that are highly dependent upon you for direction and protection, that's when you're probably most likely to be targeted, and when they're going to find the actual solution to whatever problem you're presented with to be the most difficult to execute.
Awesome. And now her class, how long is her class?
That's a 2-day class that she teaches. A big part of it is going to be kind of working on the tactics and techniques involved in child protection. That is, okay, things we need to understand, we need to think about. How can we put ourselves in a position where it's much more difficult for us to be accosted? How can we perhaps have older children take on responsibility, much as which Mike was talking about, in order to, okay, I need you to take control of this particular child. If I hand this child off, I need you to do this. Pointing out such things as, okay, there's cover. There's cover. See that over there? See, that's cover. See that over there? That's not cover. That's concealment. So that if, for instance, you told your children, hey, you need to run for cover, they're able to identify what cover is and actually get themselves in a position where they're going to be, you know, less subject to errant gunfire. She talks about, you know, the things that you might expect in terms of how children, you know, may behave. For instance, in a lot of instances, let's say you tell your children, hey, we need to get out of here right now. Well, how many of you have children that would say why? Well, that's not the time to have to explain to those particular children why you need to leave. The children need to understand that if you say, we need to leave now, come to me, take your sister and go over there, they comply with you at once, And then as soon as circumstances allow, you will explain to them the why of that particular situation. She then follows that with some range work. Most square range arms work that people commonly participate in does not involve having small third parties, maybe multiple small third parties around you, behind you, in front of you. If you look around when you're just walking at a mall, all of the different ways that people will basically carry their children. I've seen them carried in backpacks. I've seen them carried in front packs. I've seen them where people have a child in one arm and a purse in the other arm. Okay, all these things need to be taken into consideration, because some of the things that a parent might need to do if a gunfight is imminent is counterintuitive. Children will, in many cases, when they're fearful, they run to the parent for protection. Parents will clutch the children to them, and in order to keep them safe, well, that might be very well the same thing that puts them right in the line of fire. And so it's very, very difficult when you're in that situation to, again, I'm going to quote Mike, you know, is to just rise to the occasion. You're going to have to default to your training. And so basically what she and her fellow instructors will do is she will explain to them certain scenarios and then suggest methods of dealing with that scenario that may be safer, not safe, that's safer in order in terms of protecting the children. And again, you know, when you think about that, think about all the time that you've conducted all of your live fire training. You know, how many times did you actually do that where you were responsible for protecting another party? One of the things that I have done in the executive dignitary protection classes that I participated in is that I had to, at certain times, protect a client. But typically, this was a grown, fully functioning adult that understood that that's what I was doing. And so I then had to, like, okay, I can think about this. I've got to move this person away. I've got to keep my body between them and perhaps a violent criminal attacker. Okay, so I've given some thought to that. That I bet most of us have not given any thought to, okay, what am I going to do with my children? Because the last thing I really want to do is stand there and get into a firefight with one or two other violent criminals with my children huddled all around me.
Now, those are excellent points. And, you know, I think about, you know, when people talk, you know, they call us and ask us questions about, you know, do we cover, you know, incidents where someone's trying to rob a 7-Eleven and such. And, you know, they never take into account that there's a possibility that you might have your family with you. And if you have to make a choice, you know, whether to protect your family or protect another, you need to absolutely make sure your family's safe first. You know, push them back toward bathrooms or whatever you need to do to keep them out of the crossfire or any being in any danger as you engage, and not knowing what they'll do. I love how you talked about, you know, walking through the mall and saying, you see that right there, that's cover, you know, because, you know, the, education and education is key in this point. I mean, your kids don't know unless you tell them. So, you know, just practicing and testing them as to what is what and knowing what to do if something happened. I mean, you can go one step further and say, if something happened right now and the shooter and people started running this direction, this is what I would want you to do. You know, don't hide behind the, what do you call those things in the middle? The,
the mask.
Yeah. Don't hide behind something small. Make sure you run into Macy's and run toward a bathroom or exit or something, anything. And then also just thinking about having a rally point. Rally points are important. Mm-hmm. You know, in the last podcast, Mike talked about, you know, the Las Vegas shooting. And, you know, knowing where to go is important. Knowing to find cover and what to do in a serious situation like that is really, really important. Be it movie theater, a fair, state fair, you know, mall setting or concert. I mean, you should always have your mindset on you know, identifying secondary exits, finding cover, and so on and so forth. But I think Mike had something to add.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, in this podcast, and I think the last podcast, Steve brought up quoting Mike Garter. What he's talking about is the quote, we do not rise to the level of our expectations. We fall to the level of our training. And that is a tagline that I have on my email signature. And the reason I have that is I was involved in a shooting when I was on an impact team, which is a street level narcotics team. And I really learned the one thing that I learned out of that shooting was how we fall back on our training. And at that time, luckily, at that time, I was probably the most trained I was as a police officer, because we were doing entries, you know, we were doing 4 or 5 or more entries a week. And we were training a lot with the TAC team, and we were out at the shoot house, and we were doing all this live fire entries. And it was really, it really hit me how, because I remember afterwards, I had to kind of think, what just happened?
Yeah.
And so we fall back on our training. And I do believe that's true. You're not going to rise to your expectations. You're going to fall back on your training, and you have to have training. And this is so cool, because just a lot of this talking and plans with your kids is that's their training.
Yes.
And yeah, when you said cover, the difference between cover and concealment, I mean, I was like, wow, yeah, you know, I mean, and we had classes in the police academy and about that. And there's so many other things that we did that I never have really talked to my kids about. So, you know, I think it's a great topic, because, you know, your kids have to have that training, or they're not going to fall. They're not going to have anything to fall back on.
Those are all great points. Something else I might touch on is something that Stan said in an earlier podcast, is that when he approaches a business, whether it's a 7-Eleven or another venue, what he will actually do is, rather than just drive in and park, he may drive around the edges and look for, are there any potential trouble spots that I might need to be aware of? Is there anything possibly that's going on in that 7-Eleven right now that might cause me some concern? So basically what you're doing is, as you go into an area that you're going to say, okay, I'm going to stop here, park here, and go into this place. Is there anything over here? Am I seeing anything, any anomalies? Any anomalies? What's an anomaly? Well, typically, an anomaly might be something that's there that shouldn't be, or something that shouldn't be that's there. In a transitional area, what should people be doing? Well, they should be transitioning, okay? They should be going from a car to a facility or a business, or the reverse, okay? You might see a couple having a conversation. But what you just see is a guy just standing over there with his arms crossed, leaning against the lamppost, that's just kind of looking around. Okay, what is he doing? Okay, it may be something completely innocent, but there's no reason to give that person the benefit of the doubt, which doesn't mean I accost him. It just means like, do I really need to go here right now? Or is this something that perhaps I need to give some consideration to before I park and I get my kids out here? So to the extent that I can, I kind of want to sanitize that area in which I'm going to be, just to make sure that there's nothing conspicuous or visible at that time that would cause me alarm. Second thing is, where am I going to park? Okay, is there some area I can park that is potentially safer than another area? And I try to think of all these different scenarios. My daughter and her husband, they have 3 children. One is 18, will be 18 this month. One is 7, and one is 2. So that's a wide variety in ages and capabilities. And the reason I bring this up is that as children become older, they may become more responsible. They may be able to more assist us in, you know, basically establishing a security plan and executing it. Or you may have young children that are born that come back in. It's kind of like, okay, that resets everything. So any plans that we set up need to be an evolving plan. That is, they're never going to stay static for very long because something is always going to be changing. So the big thing that Melody really stressed is having a plan. The other thing that she stated that the way she articulated it, I really liked was it is easier to revise a plan under stress than to come up with a plan. So if I have a plan on how I'm going to move my family safely through these transitional areas or even in a transitional area, okay, I'm way better off if something happens that's a little bit out of the unexpected, which then I can then adapt to. And I can tell you, you guys, both of you were on teams. I was on an entry team. I think as Mike Tyson once said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yeah, that's right.
Of all the entries, we didn't execute a small percentage of all the entries that you guys did. But none of the entries that I was ever involved in went exactly as planned or exactly as we thought they would. There was always some little variable that cropped up. There was a door where there shouldn't have been a door. There was a couch where there shouldn't have been a couch. There was always something that would kind of screw up your plan. Okay, well, I had kind of the plan, and I understand that I may need to be somewhat variable. I mean, may be somewhat flexible, and I've considered some of those. It makes it so much easier to go ahead and complete whatever it is that you set out to complete. Then, like, what do we do? I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this. I've seen a team when a cost was something that's unexpected, just freeze the team for a moment.
Oh, like, yeah.
God, nobody ever even contemplated this.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you know, probably it's never a mistake to, you know, start moving unless you have some concerns about you don't know where the problem is that you might move into, actually move closer to the problem. And so it's important to have these plans in place and then just realize that these you know, these plans evolve. I really kind of want to push people towards Melody Lyre. Her company is called Citizens Defense Research. There's a lot of material out there that Melody has put forth. I think getting somewhat acquainted with some of that material is a big start. I know that whenever I do have my young grandchildren with me is, okay, all right, man, I'm back to being the armed parent or the armed grandparent. So what are we going to do? What am I going to do with these kids? What's going to happen if I see trouble brewing? And the other thing is, in many instances, if the parent actually keeps their head up and has good situational awareness and you see something occurring that gives you what we might refer to as that hinky feeling. And I mean, that hinky feeling is something that is, we just have programmed into us genetically. I mean, we're predators, but we're also prey. And when you pick up on those very, very small cues that go, that's not right, that's a concern, then my advice is to act upon it. And for me, act upon it means disengaging. If disengagement is at all possible, if disengagement is not possible, then I need to start thinking about where's my what's my alternative exits, what can I do, what children do I have, what do I have in my arms, how am I going to handle this, and start giving some thought to it so that if something does happen and you weren't able to get away from that situation, then you know what your response is going to be.
Absolutely. And I mean, you touched upon a lot of things in the past 5 minutes, but I wanted to take back take us back to when you were describing the different types of carriers, you know, even for, you know, those who have the packs for babies, where they pack them up front or pack them on the back or whatever the case may be. And, you know, I thought about that for a second because, you know, in a lot of cases, and, you know, I always say this, I said, I'm not paranoid, I'm just prepared, and you should be too. And, you know, even thinking about something as far as, you know, you have a infant that you do carry in a pack, you know, if you go into the mall, you know, in many cases, I would think forward and say, well, what would most likely happen? Most likely the shooter wouldn't pop up where you are. It'd be a group of, you know, customers running in your direction, and maybe a shooter coming from, you know, a different direction or from the same direction, and you're going to turn and run. So you would think to then carry your infant in a front pack. Because, you know, if you're running for an exit and you got somebody behind you shooting, you know, it'd be a possibility of them shooting you in the back. So you don't want to keep your kid back there. The other thing is, you know, when you're talking about, you know, preparing your kids and of the different ages, because you talked about your grandchildren, correct, of different ages. And, you know, so you have different levels of understanding. You know, you have to figure out a way, you know, not to be this crazy, not say, you know, granddad's crazy. Every time he comes around, we got to wear camouflage and get ready, you know, to do all these things. You turn it into a game. You sell them their safety with candy, and you reward them for those who identify people who stand out of place, those who, you know, when you say, where are we? They know what street they're on, you know, those who can identify cover versus concealment. And you just, you know, make it a game so that it doesn't seem like it is a job to stay safe. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The other thing was, you know, medical packs, very important, you know, to get your kids some medical training. They have, you know, classes for young people, you know, for a traumatic situation, how to stop bleeding, CPR, you know, for those who are a little bit older, you know, all these things to stay alive, very, very important for parents, you know, keeping a medical pack on you, you know, to be able to stop bleeding on yourself and another, you know, because if you do have kids with you, to be able to stop that, have a tourniquet that's prepared or that's, you know, sizable so that you can, you know, stop the bleeding in your child, you know, before, and because, you know, when it comes down to, you know, these type of shootings, the first responders are going to be going for the shooter, not trying to take care of medical. So you have to be able to know how to take care of yourself. So you're talking a 5 to 10 minute period where it's you and you're the first responder. So you have to figure out how to, you know, get your family to safety and how to respond, making sure they're safe and then responding to the threat if you can. When you talked about last episode, you know, the church stuff, and you were saying, you know, something that identifies you as part of church security. You know, they have some little jackets, little windbreakers that you can bust out of a little pack that you put on and says concealed carrier on the back. That too is good to have, because if you're going to respond to a shooter in a mall, you don't want to become the guy that gets shot in the back by security or the police that arrive, right? So you got to, you know, take all these things into consideration. You know, I mean, I love the fact that you're talking about her class, the importance of it. I'm sure there's online material as well. We're talking about doing something in the future, so we might put something together as well, you know, in CCW Safe Academy. So, you know, just continue to learn and continue to teach your kids. But Steve, go ahead and jump in. Now, you got anything to say on that?
I want to touch on something that you said that I thought was just, you know, absolutely brilliant. And that is going to be having medical equipment available. As I sit right here and I talk to you, I have on my person, I have a CAT tourniquet, I have a chest seal, and I have quick clot gauze. And I keep those on my person almost all the time. That is basically stuff that will primarily keep me alive, or one other person. If I've got two or three children with me, I need to have access to medical equipment that can, you know, address multiple injuries to multiple people. So having a sufficient amount of medical gear on your person is a good idea, but it's also a very good idea to actually know how to responsibly use that, which just kicks us off into education again. But, I mean, that's the kind of education there that benefits us every day. I mean, I think of all the people that are shot every day versus just the people that are in automobile accidents, industrial accidents, and all this other thing where an arterial bleed is an arterial bleed regardless of the source of the injury. And so having that ability to, you know, provide medical attention to your children, because I mean, the reality of it is there's a possibility every single day that we get into a car, that we can get into a vehicle accident. And I don't care how much of a defensive driver you are, it can be through absolutely no fault of your own. So just that preparation in advance, I think, is very important. And I like what you said. You're prepared, not paranoid. Paranoid means I think something's about to happen at every single moment. Prepared means I realize something that could happen at any single moment, and I want to be in a position that I have some control over the outcome.
Absolutely. And, you know, just as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, Mike and I, you know, we both have, and I don't know if you have this. Do you have this app called Life 360?
I do not.
Okay. Well, it's a great app to, and once again, it's a shout out without me getting compensated, but that's a great app to have where, you know, you and your family have it on their phones and you can kind of see where, and you kind of turn on and turn off, you know, notification and also where your family is located. So let's say you were in a mall. So, you know, exactly, you know, your daughter's in Macy's, your son's in JCPenney's and so on and so forth. And here you are and you know, Sportsman's Warehouse or whatever. And you can see where everyone is. You can see when they get to the rally point. You know what I mean? You know, it keeps track of them in real time in their GPS location. If you're at, you know, whatever, you know, Six Flags or wherever you are. So it keeps track of where their phone is. So it's really important, you know, to think about stuff like that so that you can relax and know where your family's located. Even if you're not located, you know, at that spot. We were in St. Lucia on business. What was that? 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I turned mine on in St. Lucia down by South America. And I can tell my mom was in Oklahoma City, Mama Mona. Shout out to Mama Mona.
Mama Mona.
So she was in Oklahoma City, and I asked her, I said, are you at Rockwell at the Walmart neighborhood store? And she says, yeah, how'd you know? I knew, and I was like, you know, 12 hours away, you know. So it's a great app to have. I mean, I suggest it for everyone. You know, like I said, you can turn your notification on and off, you know, to let people know where you are. But when you are in a place, it just gives you a sense of security knowing that your family's safe. My mom, Mama Mona, and my daughter, they drive for Uber. It's one of the reasons why I got it in the first place, so that when they have those, you know, I can see when they've been somewhere too long, you know, so I check on them. It lets me know if their phone battery is going dead. So I remind them to charge their batteries, because that's important, too. And then plus, you know, that if there is a mass shooting or something really serious, a lot of times the everybody's getting on the phone at once and then they shut down the cellular service so that, you know, you at least know they can't make phone calls, but you know where they are. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So like I said, shout out to Life 360 app. Make sure you get that to protect you and your family. Know where they are. It's just really, really helpful.
That's excellent. One of the things I might touch on real quickly is just talking about the planning aspect of it. And you talk about, you know, why that's so important. If I can educate my spouse or my older children or older grandchildren that in the event that something happens, I'm going to tell you what to do, and I need you to do it and do it then. And one of the things that I've talked about earlier is that it's critically important that the people that you're in charge of protecting go ahead and honor that and do what you've asked and then question you later. So if suddenly I'm at, let's just say, for instance, I'm at a cafeteria or a restaurant and I see something unfolding that causes me concern and I say, okay, we need to leave now, follow me. I need everybody to leave then and follow me. Or if I say, follow me, we're going to that position over there, everybody goes right then without question. And like I said, you know, we can always explain to them later as to what we want to do. It may very well be that I need to hand a child off or cause an older child or my spouse to pick up a child and move away from me. If I have to get into a gunfight with someone, do everything I can to avoid it. If it's unavoidable, then I do not want any family members around me whatsoever, which means I either need them to move away from me, or, and this is counterintuitive, I move away from them. I may need to go ahead and take two or three steps over to the left or the right to where I'm away from them before I go ahead and I get engaged in this fight. You know, some of the things that might happen, because a lot of crime happens at extremely short range, is that I may have a child in a backpack or a front pack where basically I have somebody that comes up there and they're pulling a gun on me, or they're coming at me with a knife or in some other manner that goes, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to handle this. And I can't do anything about this. So basically, and this is my opinion, I may just have to blame my body. I may have to, you know, basically, if I'm a strong-handed shooter, I turn to the left so that the child is either on, the child's on my front or back, is not in the direct line of fire. And while that's hardly ideal, especially if I'm holding a very, very small infant, I need to think about keeping my body between that of the potential attacker and myself. And again, I know it's not ideal, but by the same token, guys, you know, think about this. You're driving in your car and you have a child next to you, and all of a sudden something happens which causes you to brake suddenly. What do all of us do? We throw that arm out in front of that child to protect that child. Well, you're still going to have those kind of instincts. And I think an instinct to shield your child away from, you know, a potential, you know, violent threat of force is instinctive. And it's like, okay, well, then that's what we have to do. That's what we have to do. I mean, sometimes things are just worst case scenario. But you know what? There's nothing else to do except just, you know, pull your socks up and deal with it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I love the way you put that. And when I think about it, and as you talk, it just gives me flashbacks of the police department and our training. And, you know, when we did hostage rescue, you know, a lot of that was stepping off the angle. You know, we come into the door, you know, nut the butt, you know, with somebody right on your back and touching your belt, you know. And as we enter, we, you know, we go different directions to, you know, to confuse the shooter and, you know, to get a better angle. And that's the same, you know, the thing about what you're talking about is pushing away and having, you know, the actual shooter pay attention to you and get the eyes off your kids. But then that also takes me back to, you know, preparation. Again, this is something that maneuvers and movements have to, it has to be trained into your kids, because if you push away, their thought process is to get closer to you. So, you know, you need to train them and say, if I push you in one direction, you keep going in that direction and you go find cover as I try to take the, you know, the bullets away from you. That's what I'm doing. And then the second thing is, you know, open movement without engagement, you know, think about all times, just, you know, I talk about this in general tips, but, you know, keeping your kids on your off gun side so that, you know, just like you said, your natural thing is to throw your arms up to protect. It's just natural. So you'll throw your gun hand up in front of your kids as well. So you keep them on the side that you're not going to reach for your firearm with. That's important. You know, scoop them behind you into a single file until you're ready to move or whatever the case may be. If there's no, you know, you catch yourself on a wall or something like that, or you have to, you know, push them back behind you, make rearward movement as you protect your kids with them in the single file behind you. There's so many different things that, you know, you have to consider when thinking about moving with children, you know, and that too is something that you probably need to do. Go to the park and, you know, and just, you know, have some, if you're not, you can't find a secluded area with a training weapon. And when I say training weapon, I'm always talking about, you know, an ASP type, you know, blue gun or something like that. And if not, water guns, and you can get away with that at the park. Get yourself a set of water guns and you practice your movement with water guns. And, you know, you go with your kids and then you turn into a real fun thing. And, you know, like I said, trick them into training is that that's my thought with children, you know, really let them know that, you know, this stuff's important, but we're going to do it in the place, you know, that is fun, but this is how we're going to move if something happens. You got me?
Absolutely. And one of the things too, I think is, you know, articulating to your children that, okay, here's what's, if this happens, I'm going to move away from you and then I'm going to come back to you. Okay. And so you don't leave them, I'm just going to move away from you. Like, well, what happens to me? You know, they are absolutely focused on you. You're the key to their survival. They need to know that you are going to come back to them and gather them up. So otherwise, their tendency is like is to cling to you.
You really don't want them to think that you're the kid I don't care about. Yeah, I'm just pushing you away.
Sister better.
I like your sister better. You go over there. But yeah, I mean, I get it, man. I mean, it's so serious when we deal with this stuff. And, you know, like I said, you know, I mean, it just seems like with when you listen to our podcast and, you know, we really are not trying to do doomsday scenarios for you all the time. But it's so important, you know, just to be prepared, like I talked about. You know, you have to be prepared for different scenarios. You have to make, you know, give yourself an understanding. It doesn't matter if it's holidays or whatever. Don't keep a bunch of bags in the hand that's going to, you know, be grabbing your gun if you need it. You know, think about your kids. Think about how you walk, you know, down the street. Think about, you know, all these different things, you know, to make yourself and give yourself an advantage if you have a surprise attack. Because in most cases, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a surprise. You're not really ready for this thing to happen. So you got a dedicated shooter that's going to pop up at some point, and you're going to have to deal with whatever jacked up scenario he gives you. And it's not going to be perfect. Like I said before, it's not a perfect science to it, but the planning stages is so important. You have a better chance to survive if you plan.
That is absolutely correct. One of the really positive things I think about Melody's class is that you're not going to see a lot of probably, you know, real high speed, low drag training. That's not what's going to take place. What you're going to do is you're going to be performing these drills in scenarios where you have other small people or even large people around you, which means you learn to be aware of your family members while all this stuff is taking place, as opposed to, okay, well, I'll just be aware when I'm actually out in the situation. Some of the very best instruction that I've ever received occurred during classes when I basically just messed up. And I had the instructor say, hey, you kind of messed that up, didn't you? Or in some instances, I'd have the instructor go up to me and go, okay, Steve, what went wrong there? Why did the wheels come off that wagon? Okay, well, now I've got to explain to them, okay, that just imprinted in my brain that I made an error, and I don't want to make that error again. And so that is one of the beauties in taking a class like this, is that you learn to become very, very aware of all of the other players in the situation. And by that, I would mean, you know, your children, other adults. I mean, it could be adult children that are basically incapable of taking care of themselves. So that is one of the things that I really like about this class. And the other thing I might mention is that there is a concept called Managing Unknown Contacts, pioneered by Greg Douglas. I probably took that class 15, 16 years ago. And in many instances, you will be softly probed by a person. That is, they will use ruse in order to get close enough to you to then, if they do have the intention of creating or committing a crime, go ahead and move in and you commit crime. If you can recognize these people coming off and interact with them so that, as Mike would say, you remove or strip ambiguity, that is, sorry, I can't help you. All right, you're moving with your family, you're circling, they continue, you need to stay back, and then loud, stay back, said sharply. And from that point on, if they continue to, you know, encroach upon you, then a more forceful response is necessary. And so having just those skills to manage people in public, in many instances, it diminishes the opportunity for a person that really does have an assault in mind to get it committed. So I think that's real important also.
That's some great stuff. Well, we're going on about an hour, so I think we need to wrap this up. But this has actually probably been one of my more interesting podcasts. I really like this topic.
It's a great topic.
Steve, thanks for coming on. Great to hear from you again. Looking forward to more of your articles.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure, guys. Enjoy doing this.
All right. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. See you.
Bye.